Your turn. Let's make the call. Let's talk about cars, safety, strange stories in your automobile when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Alan Taylor with us. Calls coming from all over the planet here for you, Alan. We'll get to them in a second. So what's really the difference of a $20,000 nice automobile and one that goes for $80,000? Why the huge price disparity?
Well, you pay extra for comfort, luxury, better materials. You know, you go from cloth seats to Connelly leather in a Jaguar. You go from, you know, metal or plastic to carbon fiber. It's just, you know, it boils down to small things like that that make a big difference and cost a whole lot more.
Is the ride more comfortable in that $80,000 car?
Oh, perhaps. It could also be horrible, because if you buy a sports car that, you know, a Porsche GT3 that is designed to go 150 miles an hour around a corner, it's sprung very tight and you have a very tight handling car, and it isn't a comfort ride you're looking for at that moment in time. So it really depends on what you're looking for. I mean, I'll give you an example. These $20,000 Kia Optima, for example. What a wonderful car. 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty. What more can you ask for? Owner satisfaction from J.D. Power & Associates through the roof. That means J.D. Power & Associates, for those who don't know, they've heard it and heard it and heard it. It's the voice of the customer. When you buy a new car, they send you a little card, and they say, "Hey, Jim, how did you like your car? You know, Mrs. Watson, how did your car do for the first 6 months?" That is the studies that they do. And so the consumers fill them out, send them in, and that's how they come up with owner satisfaction rankings. And these cars, you know, they're doing well. Mercedes fell down quite a way for a while. And guess what? When Mercedes is number 26 or whatever it was, and Kia was number 4,
wow!
Everybody had to take a look and say, what are we doing wrong here? Owner satisfaction is not what it should be. And so everyone, even the automakers, use these as watermarks to say, how are we doing? And where Jaguar had real issues for years, they used to call, you know, their electrical system was the Lucas, the Prince of Darkness.
Right, when it was a British-owned company, right?
Correct. Today, I'm telling you, check out J.D. Power is all you have to do. They're up in the top 2 or 3, I'm sure.
Now, Ford bought them, fixed a lot of these issues, but then did it sell Jaguar?
Yes, it did. And, and Jaguar today is perhaps one of the finest cars on the road.
They should have kept that that division, I guess.
Well, you know, if you think about what Alan Mulally did, he came from Boeing, from aircraft manufacture, and he looked at, you know, in his crystal ball, that's all I can think, and when all the other automakers were going, you know, through their hardest times, he did not accept that money. He said, no, we're going to pull our bootstraps tight and we're going to make this happen. And he leveraged assets and he borrowed against company assets and they made it through. And today they're just kicking butt, making some beautiful machines. And what comes out of that? An aluminum Ford F-150. Right as he leaves the company, you see his aircraft, you know, his love of aircraft and aluminum machines. But if you think about it, George, everybody's like, oh, an aluminum truck. Let me tell you, I drove it in Texas just a few weeks ago. Absolutely phenomenal. You can take your knuckles and bang on the side, and they use military-grade aluminum, and it's thicker, and it's like you can't hardly put a door ding in it. And with the thin sheet metal of steel sheet metal, you open a door against it and it puts a door ding in it. Try that with the new aluminum F-150. And the truck is 700 pounds lighter. You're taking a third of a ton out of the bed of that truck just by making lightweighting, as we started in the beginning of the show. So you're going to get better fuel economy. They're about to announce, if they haven't, any day now, if they haven't already announced their fuel economy. And my guess is they'll be best in class. And then they put their EcoBoost system in there, which is outselling everything. You have a V6 with V8 power, but V6 fuel economy. And EcoBoost is a twin turbocharge. So when you put your foot on the gas, it goes. But when you don't need it, you get good fuel economy.
And do they paint the aluminum? You can paint that, I guess.
Yeah, you do. Now, there is, absolutely. There is one thing body shops have to consider. So you body shops out there, you probably already know this. When you're working on an aluminum body car, Jaguar, an Audi, a new F-150, that vehicle has to be worked on in a different section of the body shop because of, you know, corrosive things that a steel car has that aluminum doesn't. And so they have to have these big canvas curtains that they close, and they work on the car over there, and they have to have different sandpapers and adhesives and things like that. But
right.
I tell you what, I love the new F-150, and I really feel like I'm going to buy one. It's just unreal.
What about cost?
No, cost, it's not going to be, I mean, a tiny little increase, but I think almost like a cost of living increase. So they're doing amazing things. I always thought, well, I'm going to invest in Alcoa aluminum because with all that aluminum they're going to use, but there's plenty of aluminum out there, evidently.
Let's go to the phones now. We'll go to John in Ohio. Welcome to the program, John. Good to have you with us.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, John. Thank you.
My first car was a 78 AMC Concorde.
Oh!
And, yeah. And the engine, you couldn't beat it. It was just, lasts forever. But my question is about consumer response. I had 3 AMCs throughout the years, and every one of them had a bad gas gauge.
And?
From 78 up through 84. You'd think that they would, after so many consumer complaints, change the gas gauge system.
Well, and you know what? That's a perfect reason why we didn't have recalls back in the day. It was kind of like, well, too bad, Mac. That's the way it goes. And you know, today you can't get away with that. And especially Honda. Here's what Honda did. They fined their executives. They said, guess what, guys? This is the 5th recall this year. You guys are getting docked $75,000 from your pay.
I like that.
I do, too. They're accountable.
Accountability. You got to have that.
Yeah.
John, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Next up, we go to Candy in Vancouver, Canada. Hi, Candy. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. George, I just wanted to, in loving memory of my first vehicle, just respond to you, a little story about it. It was a 49 International pickup that I paid $100 for, and it had no brakes. And I had to get it down to the gas station to get it fixed, or down to the mechanics. And I just down-geared it, basically, you know, down these mountains out in Mission. We're pretty mountainous up here in Vancouver. And it was a long parking lot, and thank goodness, and it was empty. You know, I kind of took a hard turn and ended up, you know, at the end of the parking lot. But that truck, I absolutely loved it. And I'm wondering what's going on. There's no more stick shifts anymore. It's like we're not even driving our vehicles anymore. I can't stand it. But that truck, I drove it out to Vancouver, and I put a combine engine in it out there, and took it up to tree planting and threw police dogs in the back that I've trained and threw hay in the back, and I just absolutely loved it. I think we're getting too fancy these days.
Well, you know, and there's a very big statement that has to be made here. You're 100% right. And sadly, the youth, the young kids, they don't even care about getting their driver's license. I was so excited. I got mine on my birthday, and so did all my kids. But because of the electronic wizardry of video games and the ability to Gran Turismo drive whatever car you want on your television set anytime you want and crash it 50 times and kill 10 people in the process and get up and go have a bowl of ice cream, go back and finish the game, they don't need cars anymore. They have a virtual life that they live through their cell phones and through, you know, mobile devices of every kind, iPads. And sadly, I think that they also are a little bit lazy when it comes to shifting. They don't really want to drive the car. My children didn't know what crank-up windows were. I brought a car home one day. It was an older one, had crank-up windows. And they're like, Dad, what's that? The only thing they've ever grown up with was electric windows. And I said, that's how you roll the window down. And they laughed. It's a different world today, sadly. But I have a no-brake story. I had an Austin Healey bug-eyed Sprite. And I hit the pedal, and the brake just went to the floor. And I was coming up to a red light. And boy, my driving skills at 18 years old were good, because I had to go around everybody into traffic that was coming. And I felt like Ferris Bueller, you know, just driving through things. And I had, you know, the luck of the Irish at that moment, and I didn't get hit. But that's a scary thing. And I got to tell you, that Canadian woman, those Canadian women, they're tough.
My first car, I was mentioning, Alan, was a 67 Mercury Marquis that my dad gave to me after he was done driving it. And I was going to college, University of Detroit. I was on the freeway. It was wet, and I kind of went over a hill of the freeway. And then as I'm coming down the hill, just as I come up to the top, all the cars are stopped in front of me. And I'm doing 55, and I'm going, oh, boy. And, you know, I'm 18, 19 years old, 18, I think. I had just turned 18. And I slam on the brakes, and I start hydroplaning, and I just smash into the car in front of me, because they're all stopped,
right,
and just totaled that car. And I remember hearing metal and screeching and squealing, and I bounced off the steering wheel. I didn't even have a seatbelt on. I'm not even sure they had them then.
I know.
And this was what's so remarkable. The next day, something must have happened to my nervous system, because for like a month, I couldn't go out and eat. I'd get sick to my stomach. I felt horrible. I had no damage, and I didn't crush my chest or anything, but my nerves just fell apart.
They call it post-traumatic stress, the same thing our soldiers have.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
It was unbelievable feeling. But what a great car that was. It was sturdy, and it probably saved my life.
Yeah, I think it probably did, because that's when a big honking metal vehicle around you saved you that day. But today's cars, the car would have crushed. It would have totaled anyway. You wouldn't have gotten maybe as hurt, or anybody else gotten hurt, because it would have been a softer accident, a more forgiving accident.
Right, and the bag would have cushioned me a little bit too, right?
Absolutely.
What do you recommend for parents who drive with babies and children?
Never put them in the front seat in a car that has an airbag. Never, never. And actually, technically, you should always put them in a really good, I mean, this is your child, buy a good child seat. Always put them in the back. Put them in the middle if you can. Give them as much space between getting hit from the side and just, you know, take the time to make sure that it's secured properly. And when you're driving with your child, just realize that you're driving for two, and children are so kind of helpless at that small age. You have to drive more aware. And, you know, sadly, like the last caller said, that people are, you know, they're not as into driving as they, you know, we once were, I think, as a society, because we're so distracted. Don't allow all your things to distract you. You're driving a giant piece of machinery, 4,000 pounds, hurling down the road at 60, 70 miles an hour. It's a death trap if you allow it to be. But if you're in control of the car and not a loose nut behind the wheel, you'll probably be just fine. But really, it's just an awareness thing.
Yeah. Ellen, have you ever heard of any stories where, you know, there's a fatal car accident, the parent died, but the little baby in the back seat was okay?
I've never personally heard of one, but if the person in the front wasn't wearing their seatbelt, and they had enough sense to strap their child in but didn't have enough to strap themselves in, that's very possible.
Okay, we go to Harry in Port Huron, Michigan now. Harry, it's your turn.
Hey, guys, this is incredible. Great topic, and I guess I would just say it's not, as far as the automated vehicles are concerned, it's going to be in our lifetime. From Ford, I believe you were saying, Alan,
that's not true,
because Google's rolling it out. Tesla's going to roll theirs out in 5 to 10 years. Continental Automotive has said we will have zero fatalities. That's our vision. That's our goal. That's what the executive of the company has said. We will see it in our lifetimes. And, my goodness, what it's going to do for all of us. The Bill Schuster, the congressman from Pennsylvania, the Transportation Committee head, got in one himself and for a ride from his house east of Pittsburgh, drove on the expressway, then it did local driving, 35 minutes away, got him to the airport perfectly safe. Google has gone over now the million-mile mark now in their vehicles. They're not going to wait for the government. You know this as well as I do, George, talking about your burden about the power grid, et cetera. We wait for this government, you're going to wait forever. And they're not going to wait for the government. They're going to do what they're going to do. And technology now is faster than it ever has been. Moore's Law used to be every 18 months. Now it's changing every 6 to 12 months. It's that fast. So we will see it in our lifetime, and it's amazing what it will do for all of us.
Scares the heck out of me.
It does scare me. I tell you, thanks, Harry. I appreciate that, because once the system goes, it goes. It's like the flying car. You know, Paul Mueller's working on his car, the flying car. But, man.
You know what, George?
I don't want to get hit by a flying car.
Yeah, right. To his point, an automaker like Ford Motor Company, I remember I was talking to the chief technologist. Why would he, knowing everything he knows, tell me that today? But to your caller's point, Google can do whatever the heck they want. They're not a car manufacturer. So they can buy these whatever kind of vehicles they'll buy, or, you know, as long as they're not manufacturing, put their technology in there. It could be an aftermarket thing. God knows what, but I think to see a General Motors or a Ford, to hear from Ford Motor Company or any automaker, and besides, the guy told me that was 93 years old. Maybe not in his life.
So you never know. Harry could be right. I mean, maybe they are working on it. You know, Tesla has come up with Elon Musk. I mean, he's a genius with everything he touches, isn't he?
I agree.
Next up, we go to Carrie in Calgary, Canada. Hello, Carrie. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, George. Hello, and hello to Alan.
Hi.
I want to tell you about something very controversial. My first car was a 66 Corvair Monza.
I had one. I had a convertible. I dated my wife in it 30 years ago. I actually love that car.
Oh, the convertible. They're beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes. And you know about all the controversy with Ralph Nader and his book, Unsafe at Any Speed.
Yeah.
Oh, wasn't that the car that put him on the map?
It was. You know, and sadly, that car was Chevrolet's version of a Porsche. Rear engine, independent rear suspension.
Yes.
Ralph Nader killed it.
Horizontally opposed.
Yeah.
Did kill
it. Air-cooled engine, yes. And I took that car all over Canada here through the Rocky Mountains and all through the prairies around every curve that they make here, and never had a problem with it. It was just a wonderful car. And even to this day, I feel that that car was far ahead of its time. It had no drive shaft up through the middle of the car, and you could put your grocery bags in there, and lots of room, and the visibility, the windows and the rear window in it was just wonderful. And I was very, very happy to have it, and I sold it to a collector here up in Canada who still has it, and I just thought it was just a wonderful vehicle, and it was good on gas, and I know that maybe Alan, you would know how many years later Ralph Nader retracted his statement about the rear suspension on it.
You know, I don't know, but I actually talked to him about that at one point, and you know, I kind of feel like, yeah, he really regrets, you know, costing billions of dollars to that car company. And, you know, I mean, I guess he was kind of right about what he said, but at the end of the day, it wasn't any more or less.
And he got the publicity, Alan. We're going to come back and take final calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, I'm going to be in Toronto this weekend, so make sure if you're in that area, come on by. We're going to have a great time at the Queen Elizabeth Theater. Full information at georgenorrylive.com or our website. Under the highlight reel, just click that, and they are set some tickets aside for walk-ins, too, but it's always nice to get your own select group of seats. So come on by Toronto, georgenorrylive.com, or our website, coasttocoastam.com. Okay, welcome back. Alan Taylor with us, and we're talking about your cars. Next up, we go to Nick in Des Moines, Iowa. First time caller. Nick, you're up with us. Thanks for calling.
Hey, George. Hey, Alan. How you doing?
Good, Nick.
Long time listener, first time caller.
Thank you, sir.
Well, cars got him off the bike.
Very first car I had I was 13 years old. I bought a 1990 five-speed Ford. Excuse me.
Are you okay?
Hello?
Are you all right?
He's getting Hello? Excited about his first car. That's what it is.
Hello?
Nick, you're going to have to call back and get a better thing. But did he say he was 13 when he bought it?
I couldn't understand some of that. You know what, George? I was just doing a little calculating. I've been driving back and forth to do my radio show in Los Angeles from Oregon for the last 20 years. And I've driven 2.5 million miles to do my radio show called The Drive. And that's why I call it The Drive now, which is 80 times around the Earth. That's 4 times back and forth to the moon.
That's a long, long drive.
It is a drive.
How much do you think you've spent on gasoline over the years?
Oh, please don't make me figure that out. That would make me stop doing it.
That's a lot. Well, okay. Well, you try to call back if you can. He sounded like he was having some health issues there.
I know.
I hope he's okay. And there I go. I hang up on the poor guy.
You know what? Can I give my Twitter handle if anybody wants to see
it? Yeah, absolutely.
It is @the_drive_radio. The Drive Radio. So @the_drive_radio or on Facebook at thedrivewithalantaylor.com. My partner, business partner and co-host, BJ Colleen, just texted me and said, Ford is wrong. They're going to have autonomous cars by 2020. So, you know, it is still, it's an unknown thing. When will they have
themselves? Yeah, that is. I would guess, if I were a betting man, I would say they'll have one of them out there on the road before you and I pass on to the other
side.
Well,
they have them now. But the thing is, when will they be sold to the general public? That's maybe a better way to clarify.
And many people will have them on the roads.
Right. Today, what they're working on that is, I think, the best thing is the car-to-car communication, because when you have a connected dashboard that is connected through your smartphone, because you have a service, and when you get in your car through Bluetooth, if you have a connected car-compatible car that has a connected dash, and the other guy coming the other direction has the same thing, the cars can communicate to each other, and they can prevent accidents that way, because they're looking around the corner for you. The car that's coming from the other direction sees an accident. You're coming around a corner. It sends a signal out that says, anybody coming this way, slow down. So there's so many good things that are coming. I love technology, even though the self-driving car scares me a little bit. I say that today. Next week, I may drive one or sit in one while it drives me and go, I love that.
Would you sit in the back seat?
I think I would.
Oh, man, I don't know. If you need to do something in an emergency, what are you going to do, jump over the front seat? Then it's too late.
You're going to pray, George.
That's right, exactly. Let's go to Linda in Philadelphia. Linda, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
My pleasure. I want to tell you guys, you're a bunch of sissies. I kid you not, my first car was a 1953 Oldsmobile 98.
Oh, that's a big one.
It was a tank.
Well, what do you mean we're sissies? Mine was a Mercury Marquis. That was as big as yours.
Yeah, mine was a 54 Chevy.
It was a sissy car compared to this Oldsmobile. My mother had this car before me.
Well, George, if it came to selling the car as scrap, she would have got the most money.
I'll say.
Yeah, it's the heaviest.
More than a ton. But anyhow, my mother owned a car before me. I inherited it from her. And she was coming down the highway, and it was snowing. And a pickup truck pulled out in front of her. She destroyed the pickup truck. There was nothing but a scratch on that Oldsmobile. And had no power steering. Drove awful.
Nowhere.
Unbelievable.
Well, you know, sadly, that story kind of does tell a bigger story if you think about it. The old days when you could brag about, you know, I bumped into that guy and my car didn't get hurt at all, but it totaled his. Sadly, that is not really a good thing. At the end of the day, you really got to care about the guy in the other car too. So being that we all have insurance these days, and yes, our insurance rates are high, but at the end of the day, we want life to be the most important thing, and the car will replace the car, will replace the bumper. The cars are designed to give up their lives for our lives, and I applaud that.
But we're not sissies, Linda.
That's right. We're not sissies. Hey, no. I drove from Dallas to Las Vegas in a 707 horsepower, the new 100th anniversary Dodge Hellcat, 707 horsepower, and got 22 miles to the gallon until I mashed on the gas. I think they say if you hold the gas down, you can, through the half-inch fuel line, empty the entire tank in 13 minutes. But if you drive it nicely, it'll get 22 miles to the gallon, which I did both for a little while. But I got to tell you, 700 horsepower in a four-door sedan, nothing like it.
Well, that's a lot of motor. And yep. Thank God for mufflers, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? These cars are so highly advanced. You can dial in the ride you want. If you have the red key, you can get all 700 horsepower. If you don't want your wife to have 707 horsepower, you give her the black key. She only gets 500.
I love it. Hey, Nick's back from Des Moines, Iowa. So he's okay. Hey, Nick, you're back with us. You're all right? We're worried about you.
Yep, I am all right. I was putting a new load on the rig.
Ah, trying to work and talk. Okay, go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, I was 13 years old when I bought my first car. It was a 1990 Ford Festiva.
Now, you weren't allowed to drive, so why'd you buy a car?
Oh, I got my school permit right when I turned 14.
You're kidding.
Yeah, that's right. Some states you can get a, in farm communities and what have you, you can get a kind of a temporary type permit to drive in certain circumstances.
Yep, to go to and from school. But anyways, that car was so tiny, I think you could pick it. Me and three or four friends could pick that car up. And you're talking about the Subaru all-wheel drive.
Yep.
And got a Impreza WRX.
Well, that's a good car right there, I'll tell you. That's a fun car to drive.
Those drive so smooth.
Yep.
Do you ever have anything happen to yourself on the road, Alan, where you broke down? That's got to be the most frustrating time of driving.
Oh,
when you run out
God.
Of gas or something happens, the car breaks down. Ah, what a mess.
I have had everything happen humanly possible. Again, in those 2.5 million miles, I have had everything happen. I mean, I've had to MacGyver things together. I've had axles break on trailers. I've had cars come loose. I have a commercial driver's license because I used to drive to auctions and I drove a 10-car hauler. And we had a winch malfunction and it snapped the other tie downs and it turned the car around up on the over my head so I couldn't see it. And I had a car teeter tottering at 70 miles an hour over my head, and some guy pulls up next to me and points, and I'm like, "What's wrong?" And I pulled over, and there was a car about to fall off the top of the car hauler. I've had it. I've seen people get killed on the highway. I've helped people that have been in horrible crashes. I was the first one on site, George. I've had it all happen.
That's got to be tense.
Yeah,
I mean, tense, tense, tense. A group of people pulled a 5,000-pound car off of an individual. Where do they get this strength, this adrenaline that kicks in that we've heard so much about?
I think it's called love. People love each other, and they don't want to see somebody get hurt. And when you have that love in your heart, and you just have superhuman strength. I heard of a story one time where a mother picked up the side of a car so her child could crawl out, and all these people saw it. And I mean, something happens when, you know, it's like the Grinch, you know, the heart grows 10 times.
Yep. It's magic. Let's go to Nick in Whidbey Island, Washington. Hi, Nick. Thanks for calling. Go
Beautiful
ahead.
Beautiful place. Wow.
Yeah, it's gorgeous out here, let me tell you guys. Hey, my first car was a 1968 Dodge Charger with a 440 Magnum with a Weber injection system and nitrous oxide. I had about 900 horsepower out of that bad boy with a 4-speed and a Dana rear end. So I got to go really quick in it. Now I drive around in a 2008 SRT8 Super B Charger, the numbered vehicle.
Wonderful.
And, yeah, I really love my old car, and I got four other cars in the collection I got going. I'm here to tell you, I'm really here to tell you, that if you put those mama cars on the road, it's going to drive me around, ain't happening. No way. Hey, no way I'm going to have a car drive me and be my mama. I just can't stand the idea of doing 35, 45 miles an hour from one point A to point B when the speed limit is 60 miles an hour and people like to do 30 miles an hour in front of me.
Well, wait a minute. Let me just tell you, I said I'd sit in the back seat of that self-driving car, and the reason why is because I would have had to have had a prefrontal lobotomy, and I'd be sucking my thumb and drooling at the same time because I'd be out. I'm with you.
Alan, road rage. We wouldn't have road rage with cars that would drive themselves.
Oh, yes, you would. You'd be banging on that dashboard all day long telling that stupid car to go, go, go.
Well, you'd be raging at your own car.
That's right. That's true.
Well, that's, you know what, my theory, by the way, of road rage, and I want you to check this out, is that the bad driver, the one who cuts in front of you or the one who screws up or whatever, intentionally or otherwise, does it in front of a person who's having a bad day.
Yeah.
And that guy road rages because he's just ticked off.
Well,
you agree with that?
Yeah, there's something about that middle finger. I don't know why we react to it the way we do. You know, all it takes, and a battle begins on the highway.
Unless you're Jose Canseco, I don't think you have to worry about that middle finger anymore.
You know, Parnelli Jones told me a great story. He got pulled over by a police officer one time, the great Parnelli Jones race car driver. And the cop pulls him over, and he says, "Who do you think you are, Parnelli Jones?" And he pulled his driver's license out and said, "Yep, I am."
You got it. Dan's in St. Louis. Dan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, George and Alan. Nice to hear your voices tonight. Thank you.
Thank you.
My first vehicle was a 69 Ford pickup with a 3 on the tree. Gold boy.
I bet you wish you still had it.
Well, my brother did for a while, but he got rid of it. I really do. And you know what? It had a gas tank right behind the seat.
Yep. Those were the days when they didn't really worry too much about safety, did they?
Oh, my God. I wouldn't want a gas tank right behind me. It's like you're on a bomb.
Yeah, that's right.
But my grandfather did care about safety, and he said something that was served me well my whole life. He said, if you can drive with a cup of coffee on the dashboard, you'll never have an accident if you don't spill it.
Yeah, he's right. You're not going very fast, and you're not cornering very fast, and you're not stopping very hard.
He's right, Dan. My father worked for Ford Motor Company, Alan, so my cars when I was younger, 1968 Mustang, a 72 Ford Torino, I had a Pinto. I've had them all, you know, Navigators, just loved Ford Motor Company. I mean, he just... He worked there until he was 60 years old.
You know, I am fond of Ford Motor Company myself. I love them all, but I know Mark Fields, the president and CEO. I knew Alan Mulally. What a wonderful, wonderful man. I know so many people in that company. And I got to tell you, when you get to know these automakers, no matter whether it's Kia or Jaguar or Ford or General Motors or Dodge, I had dinner with the CEO of Dodge just night before last. You know, there's so many families and so many generations of families that grow up working in these same car companies, and it's just not what people perceive. They aren't these giant corporate monsters. They're people. They're loving families, and they really do care. And I'm so proud of Mary Barra, who is doing all she can for the people that got hurt with Chevrolet or General Motors. And
she's in a bad position to be in. She sure is. Next time you talk to the Ford people, tell them to say hi from me to Jim Vella, who heads up the Ford Foundation. He's the president of that. He was my intern in Detroit when I was an executive television producer.
Wow, I will, and I'll send this to them.
Long time ago. Let's go next to Sal in Portland, Oregon. You're on the air with us, Sal. Go ahead.
Okay. Yes, sir. Mr. Taylor, George, I have a 1948 Plymouth Special Deluxe Coupe.
Yeah.
You still have it?
Well, I just had it for 3 years.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, right.
And I have my daily driver is a 2010 Challenger, and my goal is to get a third vehicle, maybe a pickup truck. But it takes me about 4 or 5 months to find the car I like. And my first car was a 1959 Ford Standard Transmission when I was 19 years old. Ellen, do you have a 50s or 60s automobile?
You know, right at this moment in time, I do not. I've owned perhaps 5,000 cars.
What?
Well, 5,000 cars you have owned? I was a car dealer for a while. I bought everything I ever wanted, drove it for a week, and sold it. And for the last 20 years, I've gotten a new car every Tuesday dropped off at my house to drive, to do my test drive review
your
on.
Test and, drive reviews,
and,
yeah.
BJ that works my show with me and Josh and a couple other folks that I work with, we all test drive cars and we get on the radio and talk just like this every Saturday morning on 100 radio stations. And you see the reaction to this. People love cars. And, you know, even if you don't care about design, you got to love the safety of today's cars and the economy of the fact that you can get 50 miles to the gallon. And I mean, some of these new cars are phenomenal. Or whether you want an electric car, the Nissan Leaf, or you can buy a Mini Cooper, electric Mini Cooper these days. They're all kind of mandated to have something that is electric. Even the Cadillac ELR is beautiful. There's so many options for us that it's turning people that were never car guys, car people, into car people, because there's a little something for everybody. Even like I said, that printed car, the local motors where you can, you know, you can design your own car and print it out. It's just the world of the car is so much better today than it ever has been in history. It's wonderful.
It is remarkable. If people want to hear you on the radio, how do they find you?
Well, my show is called The Drive with Alan Taylor, and you can. I have a website, The Drive with Alan Taylor. I also do a show for Popular Science Magazine, Popular Science Radio. You can just, you can go to iHeartRadio. You're on iHeart. I'm on iHeart.
We're all on iHeart.
And I do another show called Inc. Live, which is for Inc. Magazine, small business. I'm an entrepreneur. And I do a lot of radio. I love doing it. I love listening to you. By the way, Thursday nights are when I drive down to Los Angeles, and I'm listening to you because I drive at night. I listen to you every week for ever since you started.
It's been a long time. It's been a long road.
Yeah.
We've got many more miles to go. I hope my tires just last as long as I can push it.
There you go. Exactly.
Alan, thanks for being on the program. If you ever need anything, you get a hold of us, okay?
My pleasure. Likewise.
Okay. Alan Taylor, and just fascinating. Our love affair with cars. I wish I kept everyone I had. That's what I made my mistake. If I had kept my Mustang and my Torino and my Pinto and my old Ford 150 when I had a farm, I'd still have them all. I wish I kept my baseball cards. They're gone too. And my comics. Oh well. Anyways, I'll be back in a moment. We've got more stories for you. Anxiety. What do you mean by that? What do you mean? I'll be back.